This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in again to this week's episode. We're going to be having another exciting conversation with a conjurer. I was recently in Branson, Missouri, and I saw a couple of acts while I was out there, but I also happened to run into a longtime friend of mine who I haven't seen in a long number of years, and so we sat down to kind of catch up, and I thought it was interesting to talk about his backstory so you would learn more about him then as well. This is someone who has been around magic for quite some time, but perhaps, again, might be one of the unsung heroes. We talk about canes and silks, which are a lot of things that are not necessarily used a lot by common people. I guess magicians, we seem to enjoy them, but I'm wondering about the relevancy in today's society of whether actually that means something other than just look at the pretty thing kind of thing. But anyhow, this is a delightful conversation, and we also get into not only the creativity, but also into a little bit of piracy and talking about the development of this and some other issues I think are going to be kind of interesting. You might find educational as well as entertaining. This week also, at the beginning of the conversation, I mentioned something about when I saw him perform this for Divernon so many years ago, and I know I took a picture of him, but I have searched high and low and I cannot find that. I was going to post that on the blog, but I did mention in our conversation if I could find it, I was going to post it. So just letting you know up front, I didn't find it, so I didn't post it. Sorry about that. One more thing before I introduce this week's guest. I want to thank Yak Williams, the owner of It's Magic Magic Shop there in Branson, Missouri. We were actually recording this in his shop. My friend Doug Anderson was in the background also purchasing a few things. So they were kind of trading some ideas back and forth and had some other customers who came in and out of the shop. And I certainly didn't want to deter any sales that a brick and mortar magic shop is going to be getting. And so I do want to encourage you, if you get a chance to go to Branson, Missouri, to stop by It's Magic and say hello to Yak. And I want to thank him again for allowing us to do this little recording there in his magic shop. And again, if you don't get to Branson, I suggest you, of course, patronize any brick-and-mortar magic shop that might be in and around or near you. Of course, if there is nothing near you, you have to use the online alternative, but I would certainly like to try to keep these brick-and-mortar magic shops in business because that's what it's all about. It gives you the opportunity to kind of run into people like we did here this week. Like with my friend, which I'm going to introduce you to right now, please welcome Mr. James Holmes here on The Magic Word. So here we are in Branson, Missouri at Yak Williams Magic Shop. What is the name of the magic shop then, Yak? What is your name of the shop? What's it called?
It's Magic.
It's Magic, okay.
Joking, Branson, Missouri.
In Branson, Missouri. There you go with Yak Williams. But I'm here then with James Holmes, who is a resident now. And Jim
not
and I.
Out of the shop.
This is Branson. Nice place you got here.
Yeah. It's that old line.
Exactly. So Jim and I have been friends since we were talking earlier. That was Magic.
Desert Magic Seminar
back around 1981.
Yeah.
Which is when I first saw him actually fooling Divernon with with a silk to, no, it was cane to silk.
One-handed vanishing cane to silk.
And if I can find that picture, I'm going to post this on the blog that you guys will be able to see, and I'll send you a copy of this.
Yeah, that
too.
Would be good.
But I wanted to talk to you about, a little bit about that. Tell me about the, first of all, Jim, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to see you here.
It's so good. You're looking good, too,
man.
I'm trying. Aging well.
yeah, don't remind me about that.
You look great. The thing I was going to ask you, you also have a book, of course, on silk.
Right. The Fantasio Cane and Candle book number four.
Okay.
That was published by David Ginn, and I wrote the entire volume. All of the ideas in volume four were mine, and then there was a total of six books in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So that
who wrote the rest of them?
Well, David would get different ideas from like 25 different people, an idea or two, and then he would make that into a book, basically.
Okay.
And then that was like volume one, then volume two, and volume three. And then I came along, had all of these ideas. I showed Fantasio, and I showed David Ginn at a magic convention. And so they were getting he already had volume three already written and ready to go. Mm-hmm. And Fantasio at the last minute said, no, I want James's book to be number four, so switch them.
Oh.
So I had to hurry up and finish everything and do some drawings, which I wasn't happy
about. You did all the illustrations?
I did the illustrations. Some of them are okay. Some of them were,
I wish I had time.
Yeah, yeah, we had a deadline, and so they switched it on me, and that was it. I hurried up and got everything ready, and then David did some editing.
So did David come to you? You already had these ideas or things, or did you go to him and say, hey, since you've already
It was more Fantasio.
Okay.
Because Fantasio seen it, then we got together with David Ginn, and he said, wow, you got enough stuff for a whole book.
Yeah.
Instead of just a couple of tricks. Mm-hmm. So that's how that all came about. Then it said, well, let's just make a whole book about your stuff. And I'm like, okay. So let me go back
in history, I guess, for people who are listening to this and wondering about it. So it was the interesting story about how that you had come up with this and the candle.
Oh, the one-handed cane. Yeah. I was chairman or in charge of a show at a shopping mall for National Magic Week.
Okay.
So I had booked all of these other magicians
in
St. Louis. This was back in St. Louis. So I was going through my act, and it was a silent act. I was already doing some candle stuff and birds and the bird cage and stuff like that. And so if you want, you can remind me about the Narm Nielsen vanishing bird cage later. So anyway, I was just playing around with my candles and canes, and I shoved the silk in a cane, put the knob on, but it didn't quite go all the way down and snug fit.
Because the silk was too big or something?
Because it's a full 36-inch silk I was putting in there. So basically, I had on my closet door, if I opened a door, I had a mirror on there. Mm-hmm. And so I was practicing in front of that, and I actually stood up on my bed. And when I did, I grabbed the cane at the knob, but it came undone, and the cane collapsed, went to the floor, and the silk was still attached to the cap, and I was looking in the mirror when it happened, and I was like, oh my gosh, I said, that looked really cool.
Yeah.
So then I had to figure out, how am I going to do this without the cane falling on the floor, and the, all, you know, and stuff. So I don't know who listens. I don't want to give away too much or whatever, but let's just say I got some that copper thin telephone wire and started messing around with the silk and the cane thing and twisting it and finding the right position. And then I got some other wire and stuff to stop it so it wouldn't coil all the way down. And there it was. That
how long did it take you then to actually, from the time of aha, that this is this could be a trick, to you kind of working on the first research and development of the final product?
A couple of hours.
Oh, is that
less.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it all came together.
Yeah, it just kind of came together because I had to figure out, okay, I got this cool looking effect in the mirror, but there was these other issues that I had to overcome. And I just started working on it, getting wire out, cutters, getting, you know, and just started playing around. I had to reposition stuff multiple times. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not giving away everything here. And I would try it again, and then I would undo the wire and then, you know,
put it back
in
there
and then try it again. Basically, it was the positioning with the silk and the cane. So, yeah, then all of a sudden there it was, you know, and I still have that.
Original
one, telephone wire, everything.
I assume they became more sophisticated in later years.
But
you handmade all those.
At first, I handmade them with a needle and thread, and then later sewing machine. And I had, and basically that was a trick that dealers never ordered the minimum of three. They always ordered a dozen, two dozen, three dozen, five dozen.
Yeah.
Because it was selling that fast. And I used to supply, had an exclusive for a while with Paul Stone in England of Ace Place Magic, you know, and he would send me a letter or something saying, okay, I need six dozen or 12 dozen, you know, and I'm like, sitting there, you know, at home sewing, you know, and I had piles of one-handed vanishing canes piled up in the living room. And so.
Well, talk about also that time that you had performed this first for the magicians there in St.
Oh, yeah. Back to the show that I was putting together and practicing for. I went to the show. I told all the magicians, I said, watch the cane trick that I do at the beginning. Because I actually had it where I twirled the cane and I held it horizontally.
Hands at both tips.
Right, at both ends. And it was a black cane, and it changed into red. Okay. The cane changed to red.
Color-changing cane. Yeah.
Right, so basically it was a color-changing cane. And then I went into the one-handed vanishing cane. But I told all the magicians, I said, watch the cane trick.
Yeah.
And they're thinking, oh, okay, it's a color-changing cane. Okay, he's going to vanish it. And then I held it in one hand at the top in the knob, extended my arm out in front of me, and then all of a sudden it was a red 36-inch silk. And all of these magicians were like, I mean, they were turkey necks. I mean, they were stretching their necks. Yeah. They were looking. They were, you know, looking on the floor, looking. They were just like, they couldn't figure it out. And everybody bugged me. Oh, show me that again. Show me that again after the show. And I didn't show it to anybody.
Yeah.
I didn't show them how it was done or anything. Later that week, I was downtown at Gene DeVoe's Magic Shop, and Neil Foster.
Magic Den. DeVoe's Magic Den.
DeVoe Magic Den. And so he had me show it to Neil Foster when nobody else was in there in the shop. And basically, Neil later on wrote out a handwritten letter with an endorsement quote and mailed it to me. And then he actually ordered a couple of them, and he started using it in his act. I was at Abbott's, and he came out and did my one-handed vanishing cane as part of his act in his show. So that was, like, you know, pretty cool to see that. So, but anyway, yeah, so that's how.
So what about working with Fantasio? How did you get to be friends with him? And saying, because I guess you started ordering more and more, and he's thinking, who is this guy? He's not a dealer. But
yeah, well, knew him at the time when I invented it, and I showed it to him because I showed him some of my other cane and candle stuff. So I showed him the cane, and then we just kind of worked out a deal where he gave me a real good price on the canes, and I was able then to make them up, package them, and then I was able to wholesale them. So my margins were pretty good, you know, on that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to put it out because it would have been too expensive to retail. Or
what kind of a guy was he? I met him a couple of times. But
Fantasio was a great guy, and his wife and everything. We used to have a lot of fun at the magic conventions and stuff, hanging out, and his daughter Jackie and that when she was still living in Miami and stuff. And so the whole family, and they were great. I mean, we would call and start talking on the phone, and then Fantasio said, no, let me call you back so that it doesn't cost you money. And then he would call me back, and we would talk for like 2 hours.
Oh, gosh, okay.
Yeah, about just different things and different ideas periodically. Yeah. And it was really cool. It was really cool to know him. And unfortunately, he died, you know, passed away a couple of years ago. And actually, that was on my birthday.
When he died?
Yes. Oh, so when I woke up and was checking my Facebook feed, I saw the post, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Wasn't it from some sort of cancer, pancreatic cancer or something? Do you remember what?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So I remember talking with him also about how he was saying in the early days when he was making this, he was the only one. And then they started ripping him off, I guess, in some foreign countries.
Well, a funny story. Actually, if you remember the at the grocery store where they had the six packs of bottles in the little cartons on the shelves, if you remember the plastic roller that used to roll out, and then they would set the next set.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that plastic roll
back. Yeah.
That's where he got that. He got a hold of one of those.
Oh, that was for.
And chopped it off, and then made a candle and stuff out of that. That's how all of that stuff kind of came about.
What year-ish do you think that would have been?
Well, that would have. He started making stuff in like '67, so I would have to say it was. You know, a little bit.
He was the first one to do that because Russ Walsh had the metal one.
That was the metal.
Yeah.
Would
hurt you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You had to really, really be careful and stuff with the Russ Walsh, especially the vanishing cane. Well, you had to be careful with the appearing cane.
Yeah.
I was at a magic convention. My friend was looking at the appearing cane and got real close and was looking, and then he released a thing and it shot all the way across the dealer's room. And that was at the Midwest Magic Jubilee.
I remember a story many years ago, back before Fantasio, I guess, in the news, where someone saw a robber. He was being robbed, and he was a magician,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
You don't
I do remember something. I think it was at a magic convention.
Yeah.
And a guy was out walking around at night after the, you know, the show, lecture, or whatever, and somebody tried to mug him or whatever, and he had an appearing cane, and he's...
Yeah.
And his pocket and pulled it out and made it appear, and the guy got startled and ran off.
Ran away.
I can't. Yeah, it was a long time ago, but that was the story. Yeah, yeah, it was pretty.
But then later years, again, there were people who were doing it more inexpensively, and he was unable really to make money like he was on candles and canes.
Funny story. He was at a magic convention. I don't think he didn't have a dealer's booth, and I don't think he was performing, but he just happened to be there. And he's at a magic booth, and they had candles and stuff there that was made in Korea.
Okay.
And this was a Japanese dealer. And he's like looking at him and stuff, and the guy asked him, he says, can I help you? You know, and he looked up, and the guy goes, oh, my God, you're Fantasio. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were here. And he took everything off of his table, dealer's table, and didn't sell them during the convention.
Well, Fantasio was there.
Because Fantasio was there, which was pretty cool. Yeah. Good gesture.
Yeah, but he could sell them at the next convention.
But he was the guy who was very apologetic about it and stuff like that. He just, you know. Didn't know, so
But his sales, I know, went down quite a bit after that, and they kind of gave up.
Well,
Fantasio, yeah.
It kind of impacted him a little bit there, and then he was getting older and was just going to retire, and I believe he sold all of his stock to Murphy's.
Okay.
And there was some talk about somebody taking over the business. But like I said, at the time...
Yeah, the family wasn't interested in taking it over, I guess?
No. Like I was saying, he was a great guy. And David Ginn, too. They both helped me a lot.
You had won the Fantasio Award, so tell me about that.
Yes, back in 1980, because of the book, the one-handed cane and stuff, Fantasio, I opened up a package and it was a trophy, stand-up trophy, Fantasio Magic Award for the most improved and original ideas with his products. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And at the time... that was 1980, I believe, at the time. I was like only one of six since 1967 that he had given that award to.
So now, it wasn't an annual event that he...
No, it wasn't an annual event. And then, can't remember what year, a few years later, Lance Burton got the award.
Lance who?
Lance Burton. My friend Lance Burton.
What's that guy? What's his name?
Yeah.
The guy who used to be. I like it now when he introduced himself.
With the purple handkerchiefs, yeah. Lance, good friend, friend of mine. And so he got it. And there's been several other people after that he gave it to. So, yeah, but that was pretty cool. I think the same year I got the Hocus Pocus Star Magic Award for the Trick of the Year, which was the one-handed vanishing cane. And that was Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks. Yeah, on the Hocus Pocus magazine. I actually went to the convention to get the award, and Fantasio was there. He was a performer, Michael Lamar, Scalzio, a bunch of other performers. And we were all on the cover of the magazine, our pictures, so that was pretty cool.
Well, you're an inventive guy and very creative with other ideas. It seems to me that would be like one of your best, you know, legacy kind of tricks. But is there something that you were proud of that you have done you think, well, this is really the best thing I've ever come up with?
Well, I'd have to say the one-handed vanishing cane. Now, there was several things inside, that's in the book with candles and stuff. That ended up being pretty clever to, you know, people thought that, wow, that was really clever, because I was able to make a appearing candle appear and vanish, but it looked like it was a vanishing candle, and then it reappeared again.
Yeah.
And it kind of threw people off. Plus, a vanishing candle would vanish under the silk. It looked like it was the regular vanishing candle, but at the end there was a bouquet of flowers inside.
Okay.
Which that fooled the magicians a lot, because they're like, whoa, wait, you know, wait, that's okay, that vanished. No, you can't do that, you know, because the flowers were loaded in the, you know, the proper way.
Right.
You know, so it kind of confused magicians at times. So, yeah, so there's a couple other things.
So when
like
you're
that.
Thinking, do you think in reverse? Or how is it that you're, because it sounds like the two things you were talking about, it was the opposite way of thinking. You're thinking at the end and going backwards.
Well, I had some different moves, and there was a couple of friends of mine, Tim Starr.
Oh, I remember Tim. Where's he, by the way, now?
He's back in Sweden.
Okay. And he used to have rings and things way back when.
He worked for there as a spinner and stuff and creating things. Another friend of mine, Steve Zulke from St. Louis.
Yep.
He went by Steve Shields. But Steve Zilke, we always used to get together and play around, so I'd always try out stuff, you know. And actually, Tim Starr told me it was funny because how to make an appearing candle, and they wasn't on the market.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I want to tip it here or not,
well,
but...
You can.
Basically, you take a vanishing candle... extend it out, secure the end. You get a baking pan for a cake,
right.
Long pan.
A long one, not a round one. No,
it's got to be a long, like a small sheet cake type pan. Filled it with water, set the candle inside, put it in the oven, and it would heat up, and then it would retain the extended... it was then extended and it stayed that way because of the memory. Yeah,
okay. That's how you make the appearing ones.
Yeah, but let's say I kind of went through a few candles, and I still have them.
Trying to get the right heat.
They kind of melted a little, you know, and stuff like that. And then I called Fantasio, or was at a convention, and I said, "Hey, Fantasio," I said, "I got this stuff. This is what I did." And I explained to him. I said, "I got a candle that'll appear." And that was Tim Starr kind of telling me, hey, okay, do this, put it into water and stuff. And Fantasio's like, well, they're not on the market yet, you know. He's like, I'm in the process of making them and putting them on the market, you know.
Is he doing his similar?
So
method?
No, I don't know how. I don't know. No, that was going to be a different process on that. But I already had a bunch of ideas with them before they ever came out on the market. So it was kind of...
Yeah, you had the instructions written before he ever released the product.
Right. So we got together at a convention, and I showed him stuff, and then that led into the book and stuff. So, yeah, it was pretty pretty interesting.
Wow.
So it's been fun. Should I tell the story without using the name?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So... the one-handed cane's been ripped off multiple times. I've confronted people on it and stuff like that. And to this day, I know of one or two still make them because they have the capabilities of cutting the silks and stuff, because you have to have the right weight silk and stuff like
that.
The mummy, because it's about a 6, 6.5 mummy. Mm-hmm. weight silk, and all you can get now is 4 and 8s, and it's eights are too heavy. So anyway, at a magic convention in New Orleans, I was sharing a booth with David Ginn, and one of the dealers that had ordered a dozen of my canes happened to be still selling the cane.
After he ran out of the dozen.
After he ran out of them, basically. So, and I knew for a fact, because I knew somebody that knew someone's, which was their mother, that actually worked for the guy sewing them up. So I knew for a fact what was going on. And anyway, try to shorten this up a little bit. Dealer show, this guy comes out, does one in each hand. About three dealers later, it's me and David Ginn's turn. I come out, pitch my book, do my one-handed vanishing cane and stuff. And people were coming up to me, "Oh man, so and so, you know, did you know that? Did you?" Yeah, you know, I said, "No." I said, "It's, you know." Well, at one point during the convention, Carol Fox, Jay Marshall,
Ab Dixon
came and found me. And Carol, you know, I knew them very well. And Carol came over and said, "Hey, Jimmy, come here." He says, "Come with us." We went over to Chuck Kirshner's booth, which he was the president of the MDA at the time.
Magic Dealers Association.
Yeah, Magic Dealers Association. And says, "Come with us." And I'm like, "Well, where are we going? What are we doing?" All of a sudden, we go to this guy's booth. And he goes, Jay Marshall goes, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to say this. Well, I'm not going to use a last name. He just says, "Hey, Paul, come here. Yeah. We need to talk to you." We went off in the corner against the wall at the end of the aisle of the dealer's booth. And he's like, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you, you're knocking this kid's trick off, you know? Let the kid have the trick, whatever." And he's like, "Oh, I don't, what are you talking about? That's, you know, what am I doing? I didn't do anything. I didn't, you know." And but Jay Marshall was just going off on him, and Carol Fox kind of threw in a few words here and there, and Ab Dixon was, you know, "Hey, yeah, that ain't right," you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then Jay's really grilling him, and he goes, "Oh, that trick's been around before. That was Nardini and Nadine used to do that trick." Mm-hmm. And he looks at him and goes, "Paul, do you know who you're talking to?" He says, "I think I know more about history of magic than you do." He said something to that effect.
Yeah.
And so anyway, they just told him, you know, "Knock it off. Don't do it anymore. You know, leave the kid alone, you know."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh my gosh," you know, because I'm just standing there, you know, I didn't know what to say. You know, here's Jay Marshall, Carol Fox, Ab Dixon, Chuck Kirshner, all, you know.
In your corner.
In my corner. And I was just like, "Oh, wow," you know. And afterwards, later that day, it might have been the next day, I'm walking down the dealers, you know, in the dealer's room down the aisle, and I'm going past this booth, and he goes, "Hey, son, come here." And I'm like, well, I walked over. I said, "First of all, I'm not your son." And I said, what? He goes, what are you trying to do, blackball me and all this other stuff? I said, "They came, got me."
Yeah.
And he just kept whining and whining about what happened. And I'm like, well, I guess the solution is don't rip my trick off.
Yeah.
And you won't get these people coming to you.
Right.
And he did
the right thing.
Yeah, he did kind of he started trading stuff and not really selling it publicly, but he would trade
barter,
you know, for the canes and stuff for a little while. And you know, I talked to him years later, and he kind of became pretty cool to an extent with things, and he wasn't selling them anymore. But yeah, kind of interesting.
So was he making them himself, or was he getting them overseas?
No, he was, like I said, he was having them made.
Having them made.
Yeah, okay. In where he lived.
Gotcha.
And like I said, there was another magician of mine, a friend of mine, that his friend's mother was one of the ladies that sewed a lot of stuff for him, and she was the one making them. So,
Do you think that particular trick, I should say, appearing in Vanishing Canes, is still relevant today? I mean, people don't know what a cane is. People don't use those kinds of canes. I mean, there are people, of course, who hobble around, and unfortunately, for whatever reason, but they use a different kind of a cane. But to see that, that was really more of a gentleman's cane they used, you know, with white tips.
I kind of know what you're saying. I think that there's still performers that use canes and stuff in their stage act. I think the audience, when they come out and they see the cane, I think they can still put two and two together and say, oh, that's a walking cane.
Yeah, but the idea is, again, I guess you would have to show the solid and then either vanishing or it's going to be changing to a cane or to a silk or something. But my point is of trying to use a cane where it should be a golf club or something perhaps that would be more noticeable.
Well, actually, Russ Walsh put out a vanishing golf club at one point. I used to have one. Mm-hmm. Had to be careful on that, too.
Knock your balls off.
Oh, man.
Golf balls, I mean.
Yeah. Luckily, it had the putter end you could fold, and when it collapsed, it would kind of hit that and not your fingers and hands and stuff. I used to have little Band-Aids and stuff on. And
Have you been working as a consultant or doing anything here in Branson? I mean, you were mentioning with Taylor Reed. You were helping a little bit in his show.
Yeah, there's some times that, you know, I'll sit and watch a show and kind of let him, you know, give him some ideas, let him know a couple things that he could do different or whatever. And so mainly I've been in the entertainment business. I've been marketing director for some different theaters and shows and stuff like that here in Branson, off and on. So,
and you were saying now here shortly you're going to be making a press release or press announcements about the nominees for this year's awards. What is that about?
Oh, well, that's just a friend of mine, Terry Bean, does the Terry Music Awards here, and they're going to be doing a press conference here shortly, and they're going to announce the nominees for the awards and the actual award shows in September. So they do the red carpet and limousines and the whole bit here in Branson, and everybody's supposed to dress up. But he's a friend of mine, and I'm just going
there. They're finest priced overalls.
Yeah. So he's a friend of mine, so I'm just going there to kind of support it.
Is that mainly on music, or does it include other variety of magicians in particular, or dinner shows?
Oh, sure. Everything. Sure.
Okay, the best of Branson.
I mean, an award, the show of the year could be any type of show. It could be a music show, a magic show, a comedy show, anything like that.
Yakov Smirnoff has been here, like, forever. Is he still kind of one of the higher-rated shows?
Yeah, he's still around. Oh. Yeah. I don't know.
Been here for decades.
Yeah, he's been here for a long time, and he's has his own theater. He moved up on the Strip, moved back into his theater. He took his big head off from a sign and then put it on the theater on the Strip, and then he was there for so many months and then pulled it off and went back to his theater. So, kind of interesting, but...
And I know for those who haven't been here in Branson for a while, like I haven't been, now the Andy Williams Theater is closed or being sold or renovated, or what's happening to that?
Yes, they tried to auction it off, but it did not meet the minimum bid and stuff. And some people know and some people don't know that several years ago, Jimmy Osmond, who took it over, bought it from...
When one of the Osmond brothers.
Jimmy Osmond,
The
younger one. Bought it from what I'm aware of. He bought it from the estate of Andy Williams and took it over and was doing great stuff there. You know, a lot of great shows and that. But then he was doing.
Greg Thomas was there for a long time.
Yeah, he was. Jimmy was in Europe. I want to say it was a production of Peter Pan or something, but he had a stroke, and so he has not been able to. Go back to performing and stuff like that. And so the wife and some other people, they kept it open and that. And now with the COVID, it kind of, the lockdown stuff kind of has put some more pressure on it. And on everybody as far as trying to keep stuff open, and which there's been a few other theaters and shows that are no longer around because of that. And so Merle Osman and with the talking dog.
I don't remember his name.
From America's Got Talent. Yeah. Can't think of his name now.
The ventriloquist, Joth, that made him talk and everything.
They were going to open up a show, and then I don't know what happened on that. They're not opening that show right now.
We close, I know people who might be listening to this thing. Okay, you need to circle back and ask him again about that Vanishing Birdcage, was it?
The Vanishing Birdcage, yeah. I was working the same shopping mall that, you know, before I invented the one-handed cane, that we were doing the National Magic Week. And I was working that for several days. It was Jamestown Mall. And
named after you, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. And actually, back 74, might have been early 75, Tom and Sherry was working there. And I got to meet them and became very good friends with them. They were great, great people.
She died from breast cancer, I believe?
I believe so. And he recently died about 3 years ago. Yep. And anyway, great people. I hung around with them.
Did you?
Every day, and went to lunch with them and hanging out backstage, watching a show. We didn't talk magic. We talked business. He told me how to do your brochure, how to fold the brochure so it doesn't crease your face, and how to put where to put your logos, where to do this, how to mail them out, what size it should be. Just tons of information. But anyway, so I'm working this.
They were on all the talk shows. Mike Douglas and everybody.
Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas and that. So anyway, same shopping mall years later, I'm performing. So I did Birds, produced Birds. I had a Norm Nielsen Vanishing Birdcage, put the birds in there, did some more stuff. I might have done a little talking. Produce a couple more birds, put them in the cage, started doing some stuff, produced another bird, turned around, and the bird cage was gone. It's like, I mean, not physically gone.
Yeah.
The cage was gone.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, they put those sections of stage together, the 3x6 sections of stage. And I guess the vibration of me walking around caused it.
Roll off?
Not roll off, but vanish.
Vanish, okay, yeah.
But that's kind of a weird thing. Now, most of the audience didn't know exactly what happened.
They're keeping their eye on you, basically. Turned around and it was gone. They're probably, what an effect that is.
Yeah, the magicians that was in the audience knew, but I didn't know. The rest of the audience didn't know. And I guess I kind of turned and put out my hands like, ta-da, sort of like a Johnny Thompson,
exactly.
Ta-da, type thing. Like, it's gone, Pam's gone, yeah. So that was it. But that was kind of a weird,
What'd you do with the dog? If you produce it, no place to put
it. Well, my suitcase table, I actually had a little container in there that I had the birds in, and I just opened it up and put him in there.
And then for your finale, you just kind of said goodnight.
Basically. Thank
off.
You.
Walk off.
Yeah, come to the next show and watch the bird.
All new for an all new show.
It was kind of weird because you had to think real quick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything went fine. I mean, I didn't stumble around or whatever. I just went on and ended my show. And
what kind of shows did you do? A lot of corporate shows or things back then, or birthday parties?
Yeah, actually, I did a lot of corporate stuff. I did birthday parties.
You never did walk around close-up strolling?
Yes, walk around strolling magic. I used to be a furniture magician, doing illusions. Yeah. I had, the crystal casket, subtrunk, zigzag, thin model sawing. I had all of this stuff, but it was just kind of a pain to keep an assistant and stuff that was Well, it showed up to rehearsals, Lessa.
Okay.
And some stuff was brand new in the cases, and I sold it all off at one point because I had to have a van. I had to have, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's just too much stuff to do.
And also to care for the animals as well, you know.
Yeah. Well, the animals were, yeah, the animals were fine to have in the act because I like that with the birds and stuff.
But you still had to train them, you know, to fly back to you and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, well,
did you ever talk to Lance Burton much about how he trained his doves versus what you did?
Not too much about it. I mean, I kind of know what he did. I mean, I had to work with my birds, make sure that they're used to me and stuff like that.
Did they live in the room with you and your?
No. I had them downstairs and stuff. But you know, I had a few fly away too, just like Lance had them fly and land on somebody's head in the audience and that. I've had them fly off or whatever. And I had one at an outside show take off.
Never saw again.
No, I did. It when it got up in a tree and stuff and. And eventually it came down because one, I guess they wasn't used to flying.
Yeah.
So it probably, when they took off, probably startled themselves or whatever. Yeah. Cause you know, they did, you know, you're not making them fly. So, you know, I
remember once producing a dove and it wouldn't stay on the perch. It kept, you know, getting on the floor and I pick it up and put it on the perch. And then at the end, I put it in this flip over vanish and it was gone. And then after the show, whenever I was unloading and getting it ready, I saw an egg in there. So that was what was happening. It was trying to lay an egg.
Yes. Yeah. I had some eggs and stuff and always had to.
On stage while you performed?
No, not while I was performing.
This one did was.
Oh, okay. But always had to. Make sure that the feeding schedule prior to a show that I didn't do feed them because
you don't want to poop all over the
and I've had some experience with
soiling
with that. The bird produced the bird and there it went and all the kids laugh, you know.
That wasn't the effect you were going for.
Had
though.
To tell mom, yo, I'll get that later, you know. But yeah, I used to stay pretty busy doing a lot of shows. I'd do 250 shows a year.
All in around St. Louis area?
Yeah. There was a lot of times I'd travel outside of the area for a couple hours.
Did you do any trade shows?
Actually, I did do a few trade shows and was starting to get into that a little bit more. And
Bud Dietrich help you? Because Bud was St.
Louis. Yeah, I used
Louis
to go over to Bud's house, Bud Dietrich, Shep Hyken, and Jeff Lefton, and that. We all used to get together sometimes over at Bud's house. And
what was Bud's wife's name?
Audrey.
Audrey, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, they were great people. Yeah, we would start talking about stuff, and Jeff had a trade show coming. I think Jeff or Bud or something, it lay one of those tape recorders out. Because while you're talking, if you're not taking notes, before long, you know, a minute or so later, you're like, what was that good line or that good idea or whatever? So a lot of times it's good to record. Now it's in your phones. You can
or on the podcast.
Yeah.
I remember at St. Louis Magic Jubilee one year in which I was doing my talk show on stage, and I had Bud and Audrey there.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to quickly bring this up is just because Bud could hardly get in a word edgewise because Audrey was doing all the talking.
Audrey would she was great. She knew all of the stuff. Actually, for the 50th anniversary of the Midwest Magic Jubilee, about a year before, I used to do video production stuff too. So I had broadcast cameras. And about a year before the 50th, I started gathering like Mark Wilson, Daryl, Michael Lamar, all kinds of people. Hey, congratulations to the Midwest Magic Jubilee and stuff. And Lance Burton did one in Vegas and sent it to me. Got Mark Wilson, whole bunch of people congratulating the 50th. And part of that, I went over to Audrey and Bud's house and interviewed them and set up cameras. And because they were part of the founders of the Midwest Magic Jubilee.
Yeah, right.
And so they all told the history of the Jubilee and how it all started and what they used to do, where they used to hold it, and all kinds of interesting stuff. And before the shows, the evening shows at the Jubilee that 50th year, they played those videos and that. So that was pretty cool. And I should still have those videos.
That was one of those things after the show and then the next year and later when Bob, or when he died, Bud died, people were saying, man, was that recorded? Is that someplace? It was like, no, for whatever reason, they didn't record that, unless you did, that talk show when I was talking with Bud and Audrey.
You know, I remember, I remember that. And there was one of the times I had some cameras set up and recorded the shows and everything for the Jubilee, and I don't know
if that was actually.
Yeah, I don't know if that was part of it or not. Was that the 50th anniversary?
Might have been. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've got the tapes and stuff, but the thing I was talking about was separate. That was over.
No, I understand. Yeah, at their just house. The little congratulatory messages that you got. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, but Bud and Audrey's interview
about
the Jubilee was done at their house and stuff. But I know I still have all of that, and whatever I taped at the Jubilee, I still have in my
possession. Well, listen, I'm glad we had some time to get together here. And before I close, the name of my podcast is The Magic Words. Tell me, what is your phrase? What's your philosophy of life? What's your magic word or words?
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
Yeah, catch me off guard here. I don't know.
I always do that.
I mean, you know, I should have realized that because I've heard your podcast before. You always throw that question.
Yeah. And everyone says the same thing. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Just live life to the best you can every day. And
as if it's a laugh, because eventually you're right. You'll be right.
A magician or whatever, and you're in a magic club, you got a philosophy, try to help the younger magicians and stuff, and try to get more people into magic, because it's kind of dwindling down, so, you know, because it's a cool art, hobby, whatever to be in. I'm glad I got into it, you know. It's kind of served me well over the years, and then it helped me branch out into other areas of the entertainment business. So, you know, just stay positive about stuff and
live every day.
Yeah.
That's the best. Yep. Good. Thank you, Jim, very much.
All right.
Well,
thank you,
sir. So, the Magic Word Podcast, that was James Holmes, Scotty out.
Thank you very much, James, for being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. This has been a delightful episode, as always, and it has given our listeners a chance to make a new friend. If you have not had a chance to visit with James and you happen to see him, well, now you know him and know a little bit more about him. And it was very interesting in giving us some background and kind of how this all came about and your creative process and everything then as well. Plus some of the names you were talking about from history. So it's always great to catch up with old friends, and I enjoyed our conversation. I also want to mention, while I was in Branson, I had a chance to visit with and see Gary Carson and Rick Thomas, both of whom we got to sit down and do a conversation with, and that's going to be coming up in future episodes. So I'll kind of give you a little preview there. I'll also say, starting next week, you need to start tuning in a little bit more regularly, because I'm going to be back in the real world again doing some live updates from the conventions as I attend Abbott's Get Together and in Colon, Michigan. And we'll be having a series of five different updates, starting with a prelude that I'm going to be posting on Wednesday. I believe that would be August the 4th, and kind of giving you an update of about my travel there and also the golf tournament, the Open Colon, that I'm going to be playing golf in that one on Tuesday the 3rd, and then releasing this late that night on the next first day, actually, which will be the 4th. So you hear a little bit on that, and then each day come back and hear more on what's going to be going on there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Be sure to tune into that. And also be sure to subscribe to the pod letter so you know what's going to be happening from day to day and week to week as we go on into this. And there are a lot more conversations with conjurers we'll be having coming up as I attend more conventions. I have five of them planned between now and the end of the year to attend. So I'm getting back in a big way and giving you an opportunity to feel as if even though you can't get out or you may not be able to attend some of these conventions live, you'll be able to hear what's going on through vicariously, if you will, by listening to these episodes of the Magic Word Podcast. I thank you so very much for listening. I thank also for those of you who are the friends of the Magic Word who have been supporting us with your financial pledges and your donations. And if you're interested in learning more about that, you can get all that information on the website, themagicwordpodcast.com, of course. Well, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to keep positive in life. This is Scotty out.